Welcome to the Swords and Scrolls podcast, where a rotating rogues gallery joins me in discussing comics and more in the genre of heroic fantasy. I am Jared Savitas, your guide in the Battle of the Bards. Joining me for the first swings of the sword in a series of episodes discussing this battle is that twin-headed stone monstrosity, the internet's Joe Patrick, and my name is Matt Baum of the Two-Headed Nerd Podcast. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Oh there, dude.
Ho there.
How are we doing this morning?
Doing good, Coffee up.
Coffeed up, feeling good.
Oh, he's got his job. He's feeling the job, baby.
Whip some ass. It's going to be great.
Okay, so I think I need to clarify, what is the Battle of the Barbarians? What the hell am I doing? I've been asking myself the entire thing because, listen, I don't like crossovers. I'm sick of event books, and sure, here I am doing one myself. The Battle of the Barbarians is what I'm calling this series because my friends over at the Bronze Age Monsters podcast are covering all the Atlas books, the first issues of the entire run of Atlas.
Nice.
And in that series is a book by Larry Hama, written and drawn, called Wolf the Barbarian.
Oh, W-U-L-F, Wolf.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Two Fs, right? Probably?
One.
W-U-L-F-F?
One.
Oh, just one. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That guy.
They weren't that desperate. Come on, Joe.
I mean, I think there is a wolf with two Fs, though, but that might be a different
I wouldn't
character.
Be surprised.
Yeah.
But it's W-V-L-F-F, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
It's like Wolf.
Yeah. There's no U.
Yeah, we discussed. Wolf was the guy in the last book we talked about, right?
Yeah. Wolf was
all
there.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was the guy was hanging
Wolf
with Conan.
Wiley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, Wolf was created to take down Marvel's Barbarian books. And Marvel's Barbarian book at the time was Conan, of course. And so I got it in my head that, you know, it would be kind of fun to compare the books the months they came out and see which comic did Barbarian Sword and Sorcery better. Now, in order to get to that, I got to check and see what these books are. So I start looking at what Conan came out at the same time as Wolf.
Right.
And it's this storyline we're going to start getting into here, which is an adaptation of Gardner F. Fox, Sword and Sorcery novel, Kothar and the Conjurer's Curse. So I was like, well, I can't jump into this midstream. So I got to start from the beginning. And issue 46 of Conan the Barbarian from 1974 is the beginning of this adaptation of this Gardner F. Fox book. So then I was like, okay, so really it's a battle between Kothar, Conan, and Wolf as who did it best. I will be appearing on the Bronze Age Monsters episode where they discuss that first episode of Wolf. And then after that, I'm going to continue with Wolf and those Conan books over here on my show.
And I would talk about Wolf. I would love to the subtle differences between Wolf and Conan.
Yeah, right. And so it's going to be a battle, baby. And each episode, I will decide who wins the battle. Firstly, I want to ask you guys, Gardner F. Fox, all apologies. He did not really register with me as a name I was hyper familiar with until at the beginning of this podcast that I do, I started to cover those Thongor books in Creatures on the Loose.
Yeah.
And Gardner F. Fox, he wrote issues 26 and 27 of that Thongor story in those issues of Creatures on the Loose. I briefly touched on that in the third episode of this show. So if anybody's interested, go back and check that out. We're going to get into him a little bit more deeper because, man, this guy is a big name in Golden and Silver Age comics. And I feel like a real heel for not knowing this guy.
No, I don't think you're like, look, Gardner Fox did so, like, I, when you said the name, like, I know that name. I don't know why. The only reason I recognize it is because I worked in a comic book store with Joe, and there were some serious Silver Age, Golden Age nerds that dealt books. And I looked him up, and I was like, oh shit, this guy invented Wesley Dodds, the Sandman. Like, I had no other, and I love that character. Why don't I know that? You know, this dude wrote, he wrote the first three of six stories of the Flash comics in.
Now, hold on. Are we getting into the resume right now, Jared? Or are we saving?
Yeah, let's do it. We're talking about Gardner right now.
So Gardner Fox has a resume that is extremely impressive as far as comic book fans are concerned, but it also ends in like the late '60s, early '70s.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not a fan of books of a certain age, then you might not know his name, but you are definitely aware of many of the things that he created.
Like, think about the famous people that we do know that are household names. There's maybe a list of six. Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, you know, Stan Lee, obviously, maybe John Buscema cracked out. But like Gardner Fox, his name, this is not a household name. He's a deep cut, unfortunately.
He's a well-known name among comic book historians. And like I said, if you don't know his name, you know his work for sure.
Yeah, this guy, he worked on Justice Society of America, Hawkman, The Flash, Sandman. Like, he was all DC back in the day.
He co-created Sandman, Dr. Fate, Starman, Hawkman, The Flash. He co-created the Justice Society of America.
I had no idea.
Then he went on in the Silver Age to create Adam Strange, the modern day, like the Silver Age version of the Atom, Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, Zatanna. He then, because one Justice themed super team was not enough, he also co-created the Justice League of America. And most notably at DC, at least for modern readers, Gardner Fox co-created the idea of the multiverse.
Yeah, Flash of Two Worlds.
Gardner Fox wrote the most famous Flash story of all time, The Flash of Two Worlds, which introduced the concept of the multiverse to DC Comics. Gardner Fox is a big old deal at
DC Comics. That's probably the most famous Flash comic, and I did not know he wrote it.
It's wild, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's certainly a well-known name, but I don't blame people that aren't like students of the history of comics for not knowing who he is.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, he wrote over 4,000 comic book stories, 1,500 for DC alone.
Yeah.
He created Batman's utility belt, dude.
He created
that's
the utility belt.
Insanely important to that character.
Keep in mind, though, I feel like Marvel, for some reason, did a much better job pumping up their talent, the names of their talent.
Silver Age, yes.
Yeah.
But in the Golden Age, like, Batman's utility belt was probably introduced, I would say, I actually don't know. I think it was probably around during the Golden Age. In the Golden Age, comic book creators, like, their names were unimportant.
Sure.
At the time. You know, except unless you're like, oh, Bob Kane, he signed his name to every single Batman story, even though he didn't really deserve all that credit.
Right.
But, you know, on top of the actual creations that he contributed to, he also did work on other people's characters, like Jared said, Batman. And so, yeah, things that you know about from Batman mythos, Gardner Fox was there.
Utility Belt created in 1939, two issues after the debut of the character.
Yeah, so there you go.
Pretty quick.
Mean.
Yeah, so like, he worked with Bill Finger on yep. Batman. He worked on Zatara comics, who was Zatanna's dad. He scripted Detective Comics, which included characters like Zatara and Speed Saunders, who in modern day comics would become the grandfather of the current Hawkgirl. Kendra Saunders is well, is
like
is
think Randolph. Of the list of names that Golden Age, Silver Age that were around, like kind of did both from the DC side versus the Marvel side. I can probably name 10, 15 on the Marvel side. I'll bet I can name 5 or 6.
Well, sure, because Marvel was good. Stan Lee was good at creating the illusion of the Marvel bullpen, right? Where it's like, hey, all these guys work together and play together in this office in New York City.
There was DC, no DC bullpen.
there were certainly names that people would come to know, like Carmine Infantino and, you know, Gardner Fox and Mike Sikowski and Kurt Swan. But Marvel did a much better job at like promoting names, like fans would attach names to characters and stories at Marvel more so than they would at DC.
Even that list that you just named, I would say Infantino and maybe Swan are people that like some comic nerds might recognize. Some of the ones you just said, I didn't even know.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Sikowski was the other co-creator of the Justice League of America.
Crazy.
Carmine Infantino co-created Barry Allen. Like, so he created the Silver Age Flash. But yeah, Gardner Fox, man, he's a big old deal.
Now, why is he a big deal for my show? Fox was a big fan of the pulps. He loved like John Carter, Warlord of Mars, and so he's read a lot of Burroughs, and he was a, according to Roy Thomas, he was a big Robert E. Howard fan as well. And throughout the 50s, Fox wrote for the pulp magazines. He wrote stories for Avon Comics. Now, most notably, he wrote a comic called Crom the Barbarian, and it is considered the first sword and sorcery comic series ever. There is a collection of that, which I recently bought from the Gardner Fox Library in the late 60s, early 70s. Sword and sorcery paperbacks started to pick up big steam. So he jumped over to that, got into the popularity of sword and sorcery, and he created this character, Kothar, and from 1969 to 1970, wrote 5 books of Kothar. The first few are like short stories, and then he starts to do long-form novels, and the story we're doing today is one of those. Kothar is a barbarian out of the northern world of Cumbria. That's similar. And but hey,
maybe it's Cumbria, you know. Maybe it's pronounced different. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, right. Maybe this is the back of the Kothar book. Let me just read this to you here from the first book, Kothar, Barbarian Swordsman. From the world beyond, or past time, Kothar comes from out of the deepest, most violent recesses of mankind's collective memory. Kothar, the gigantic barbarian, strides, the enchanted sword Frostfire glittering in his mighty hand. Lusty, hot-blooded, masterful, unafraid of things real or unreal, Kothar dominates the misty, bloody world before recorded time. Yet, though Kothar's world existed in another age, perhaps another dimension, it springs vividly to life. Mapped, charted, chronicled, Kothar's fantastic world suddenly becomes real. The sorcerers, dragons, witches, evil potions, unspeakable monsters. And Kothar, an epic hero for any age, overshadows everything.
Lusty, huh?
Yeah, they describe him as horny.
Said lusty, I was like, that's the last word that registered for me.
It's
horny, bro.
Let me tell you this. I've read all 5 Kothar books in preparation for this battle.
Wow.
Kothar, he cares about food. He cares about drink. He cares about ladies. And he cares about ladies so much. He's super grabby. He's super pushy. He is, it's not great a couple times. he straight up, he rapes a woman. And it's very hard to root for a character who does shit like that. I get the lusty hot-bloodedness.
Right. I mean, look, we're telling a barbarian story, and I'm not saying it makes it better or worse. All I'm going to say is there were different rules for barbarians. They were not heroes. Sure. These were questionable that did
not. This is the hero of your novel, though.
No, this is the main character of the novel, and I think focus on. Just because you are the main character doesn't mean you're a good guy. Kothar, if Conan, as written in Marvel, very much a hero. Yeah, kind of an anti-hero. Like, I'll do what I want. I'm a sellsword. But even in this story, we see him, rescue, a woman that's tied up. She's like, that ain't right. Whereas Kothar might be like, yeah, I'll rescue her, but you're not going to like what happens next. Kothar is he's a questionable character. And it just is what it is. That's what they were writing. This is not really a good guy.
To talk about that real quickly, not to get into the book yet, but to mention that, yeah, he does rescue that girl, but then he also thinks she's going to be great on the road, and he can't help eyeballing her. That's the other thing, is in the stories, they always talk about what the breasts are doing. They're,
Sure.
As a woman is just breathing.
Well, who are they writing for? They weren't writing this for your mom,
I get it. They're pulps. They're doing pulps. I'm into it. I understand.
It was like her breasts boobily boobed down the stairs as she boobed her way towards Coast.
And I'm an adult. I understand. I can take these stories for a product of their time and stuff like that. I know how to, I can handle the information. I'm not condemning them. I'm just saying a person needs to take them and know what they're getting into. And
I mean, it's okay to think critically about them and
sure.
It's okay to think that that stuff's bad and still be able to think critically about the story and the way the story is told and things like that.
I'm reading some people talking about it on Reddit, and this guy was like, and he's saying exactly what we were just saying. Like, even when he was reading them at 13 or 14, which was years after, right? He's not a super old guy. He was like, this character makes bad choices. He's like, and I'm not just talking about the way he treats women. There's a chapter where he got cut really bad and he stuffs the cut with dirt. Just make it stop bleeding. It's like, even at 13, I was like, this guy's an idiot.
It's a Rambo Field dressing, Joe.
That's right, baby.
Do you know the Witless on Lothar story?
Okay, that is his John Carter character.
Okay,
it's a Sword and Planet character. He also came up with, I think his name is Kyrick.
Okay,
Warlock. Who's
the only reason I'm bringing it up is because somebody else said if Kothar popped up in Witless on Lothar, he'd be a Kothar of Lothar and a really mother Fofar. Like that rule. One bad mother Fofar.
Fox also created Kyrick the Warlock, who is his version of Elric.
Elric. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
they all had these versions, right? Everybody, mm-hmm. You had a barbarian, you had an elf sorcerer.
It's funny how a guy as creative, he was a creative juggernaut in the comics field. And then when he began writing sword and sorcery novels, he's like, here's my Conan, here's my Elric, here's my whatever. My John Carter. And it's just like, well, hold on a minute.
I think that's the only way you made money, though.
You gotta jump in when it's hot.
I'm dropping a picture of Kothar in the chat. He's blonde. Kothar is kind of a Thundar looking dude. But also naked. I think if you wanted to make money in the pulp world, you did this stuff. And the editors are like, we're not looking for that. We're not looking for new barbarian ideas. Give us your version of Conan, because Conan's what makes money. And
that's a kick-ass cover.
Yeah, it's a great cover. Right, and they know what they were doing. They were all trying to make Conan money, but get their own Conan. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now, just, regarding the way Kothar treats women, like we're here to talk about this Conan adaptation, and so we're not gonna like get too crazy into the Kothar of it all. I or at least not.
We are a little
like
bit,
Matt,
Joe.
Matt and I didn't read the Kothar story, so like our knowledge is limited. But it, at least it, like in this story, yeah, Conan is eyeballing this woman, and he's like, "Ooh, yeah, she'd be nice to have on the road," and blah blah blah. But he also does come right out and say, "I'm not interested in anyone that's not interested in me."
Well, yeah, they were writing Conan as
And so it's like I was like, all right, yeah, good job, Roy. You know,
like it wasn't a like, kid's like, book, but you also weren't going to see like
Conan is horny, but he's not. He's not a rapist. You know,
he's right. Not a rapist. No, he's.
Just, I mean, then he does swat the lady on the behind, but that's right. All. At that point, they're playing with
it. Let's keep moving. Let's keep moving.
In the Kothar stories, he doesn't swat her on the behind. He grabs it. Like he grabs ass,
sure.
In the books, sure. And then here's the thing, though. I'm not going to sit here and say that Conan is infallible because they're, you know, in the Frost Giant's Daughter, he tries to chase down and rape the Frost Giant. He would have raped her had he his hands
not caught
on her.
Yeah,
and he does force a couple ladies to kiss him. At the end, the thing is like it always it'll happen at like the end of a story after they've been through so much and sure. Conan is so fired up, he's all like, "Come here, baby, come back. We barely survived that. Give me these kisses." And yeah. The ladies are always like, "Oh," at first, and then they're like, "Okay, fine, I'll kiss you."
I mean, Indiana Jones did that shit too, you know?
Not great.
Like, I'm not saying it's okay. It just that's what we did in the 80s. They were man's men and women. They were
Let's not go there though. Let's just not do the like. Well, that's how it was done. Like, no.
I'm not saying
it's not okay. It's not okay. Like,
I'm saying
we recognize now in the year of our Lord 2025 that that kind of shit does not fly.
Well, let's stop apologizing for it and talk about the goddamn story.
Okay, let's do it. Okay, so now I will also say that I checked some various role playing game rule books that I have that have appendices in the back that have sections dedicated to inspirational and educational reading. The only time the Kothar books appear is in Gary Gygax's 1979 Dungeon Master's Guide. Nobody else ever says read Kothar.
So that's the other thing I'm reading here. And it's like, everybody is saying like, look, man, these novels are forgotten for a reason. The Conan stuff was better. Read that. If that's what you want to read, read that. This is like deep cut. You know, they fired out this pulpy shit.
So you've read all the Conan novels.
Yeah. Like if you're
reading, and you're starved for more material.
You really want more, right. Go for it. But you don't need to read this.
They do have some fun bits though. And I feel that the first books that have shorter stories in them are, you know, like adventure stories. Here's an adventure. Here's an adventure. Here's an adventure. Those I enjoyed much more than like this long form story that he does. Cause I feel like it kind of whines and wraps around itself a little bit, maybe too much. And let's
filling pages. They said, okay, give me 250 pages. And he was like, ugh, I wrote 120.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. You got to pad that shit out with some butt grabbing or whatever.
Okay, so let's see here. So I wanted to read a little bit of what Roy Thomas said about this. He in the back of the Chronicles of Conan, Volume 7, The Dweller in the Pool and Other Stories, which came out from Dark Horse Comics, they have these stories collected, and in the back, Roy writes, you know, pages about all of the comics in the collection and stuff like that. And so he's writes quite a bit about how he came to decide to adapt the story into Conan, you know, cause he was like, if it's good adventure, it's good adventure. And we can just, you know, change some names and just slap a coat of Conan paint on it. And we'll be good.
It is what it is. Right.
He comments a little bit on Fox, and then this is one thing I actually one time when Joe, when we met in person at Matt's birthday. And also, hey, today is Joe Patrick's birthday, everybody. So,
hey
Joe.
Happy birthday.
Get old.
Thanks. I am.
The
not as old as you two fuckers.
All right. Easy.
You'll never be as old as us.
No.
Roy says here, I followed Gardner's plot fairly closely since changing anything substantial in the early pages might lead to severe story problems later. It was a good yarn, and he had a decent knack for coining names that echoed the works of others without treading on their toes. The Shoggoth in his novel, and now in Conan the Barbarian, was of course merely a double consonant away from H.P. Lovecraft's differently monstrous Shoggoth.
Shoggoth.
Yep. Gardner rather liked the notion that many readers would notice the similarity and feel they were in on some in-joke, and that other less sophisticated readers didn't get it.
With so, that, the Shoggoth?
And, of course, you know,
Shoggoth is like a monster, right? Like a big old monster.
I just dropped a picture of him. It's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, Shoggoths are a whole thing.
Shoggoth is less like... like a golem looking thing that somebody tiled basically like that your mom did like a really cute like tile job on or something.
It's like a mosaic. A mosaic monster.
Yeah. It looks like somebody brought the tile section of Michaels to life. Right.
Right. And so when we were at your birthday celebration, Matt, Joe and I were talking about this and I asked him, I was like, would you want to do this show and talk about Gardner Fox and whatnot? That's where I was. I said to Joe, I was like, I don't know if Fox is making fun of it. You know, like Roy says, like people just, you know, if you're not in on it, you're not going to get it. And so I was like, is he kind of like,
I don't think
serious or is he tongue in tooth?
I don't think he's making
tongue and tooth in it.
I think a lot of these guys, they were buddies. They all knew each other, right? They were
but they didn't know H.P. Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft was from the beginning of the century.
No, but look, this dude, Gardner Fox, was pretty old, Joe.
I know, but I don't think he was a contemporary of H.P. Lovecraft.
No. What I'm saying is he was aware of H.P. Lovecraft.
Of course.
And just like, think about hip hop, right? All your favorite rappers are lifting verses from rappers that they loved from back in the day and putting them in their own verses and stuff like that. That's all this is. This is Gardner Fox going, you know who kicked ass? H.P. Lovecraft.
Here's this is what I think is going on, Jared. I think, first of all, Matt, I'm always thinking about hip hop. Yeah. Second of all, I think this is Gardner Fox going, you know who people have heard of? Shoggoth. So I'm going to name my monster Shoggoth.
I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Back
Why then. Would you think it's more likely that it's a tribute and not him trying to like bank on a familiar name?
100%.
Because he's already doing a Conan ripoff.
H.P. Lovecraft.
And an Elric ripoff and a John Carter ripoff.
You're getting paid for that. H.P. Lovecraft was more famous now than I'll bet he was in the 70s. Only serious nerds were reading that shit in the 70s. H.P. Lovecraft was not that
where
big.
Where is your evidence to support that claim?
Go look at any of the stories that you hear about H.P. Lovecraft. He came in like 90s. Seriously, like late 80s, 90s, he started to come back. His books were back in the press and stuff.
Sure.
Like.
I think based on.
Also, I'll give you some more evidence right now.
Oh,
Jared just told us that Roy Thomas said that.
Oh, did Roy say? I must have missed that part.
He's lying too. I don't know.
I think that everything becomes a little bit more popular and a little bit more viral once the internet comes into play. But like, if we're talking about guys that like wrote zines and went to weird conventions and like, you know, traded books and all of this stuff, like those guys all knew Lovecraft.
Sure.
And so I think based on the fact that this guy is doing takes on very well-known characters in all of his other books, that he thought that Shoggoth was something that people would think sounded familiar.
No way. Nobody knew Shoggoth. Okay, why didn't you go Cthulhu, the most famous one?
Well, I mean,
Or Yog-Sothoth, the second most famous one, you know, or
because like, those aren't really great roll off the tongue kind of names for a golem monster. I think it's just as likely that he was trying to bank on a recognizable sound as it was that he was paying tribute to a writer that he liked.
Look, the moral of the story is here. You come for the Conan, but you paid for the Shokoff. This thing kicks ass. It's great. It looks
okay, let's get into it.
Professional wrestler wearing like some kind of Egyptian helmet. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then he's got like, you know, the tights and he's got like the bracelets on his huge muscled arms. He's a monster, man. This guy rules.
And he's on our cover for Conan the Barbarian number 46 from 1974. The cover is drawn by John Buscema, with alterations by John Romita.
Interesting turn of phrase. I wonder what that meant.
Romita did alterations all the time.
Yeah, he came in and was like, no. Let me fix that.
Like he would redo faces and stuff like that.
Yeah, he was the art director at Marvel, so that he probably did just like without even consulting the artist.
Mm-hmm.
Before things went to print, he's just like, well, this is wrong, and this is wrong, and this is wrong.
But the cover has a couple blurb boxes. One of them says the warrior and the wizard spawn, and then it says Shokoth. He stalks the haunted ruins of a mad sorcerer's castle, and we have Shokoth menacing. Or it looks like he's got Conan by the arm, who's dropping his sword, but he's got a length of chain for some reason. And there's I believe that is our young lady Stefania in the background.
Stefania, yeah,
scared of the situation, and they're in a ruin, and. Yeah, Shokoth is Shokoth of the Many Stones is like a stone golem.
It's interesting to me that he looks different on the cover than he does in the comic, considering they were drawn by the same guy.
Yeah, he still has. Yeah, because it looks like he's wearing the traditional like monster underpants that Marvel mm-hmm. monsters have. Right. And but then he's got like that.
He's got some sort of yoke around it. Yeah, it's like an ox's yoke around his collar. Like it's like he's like a work animal of some sort. You know,
mm-hmm.
like
he's got that thing. How many books were Sinnott and Buscema drawn at the time? There's a good chance they drew this cover, and then 3 months later they got to like this page where they drew the thing. They're like, I drew it differently. I don't know. I like it better now. Screw it.
Well, I don't know if John. I don't know if Big John was drawing anything other than Conan at the time. Joe Sinnott would have been. He would have been inking Kirby's Fantastic Four, but I'm not sure when that ended. That ended with FF 103 or 102.
And it's interesting you bring up Sinnott, because in that same volume from Dark Horse I mentioned, Roy says he believes this is the one and only time Sinnott inked Buscema on Conan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, the art looks a bit different because of Sinnott than mm-hmm. Buscema has looked in past things we've talked about. So, I can tell you right now, this came out the same month that Fantastic Four 154 came out. We know this because of those little blurbs Marvel used to put in the bottom margins of the pages.
Oh, yeah.
In the 70s. And so this was years after Kirby and Sinnott were done on FF.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure what Sinnott was doing at the time. We know that it wasn't inking Conan on the regular, though.
No. Sinnott finished Fantastic Four 102, 1970. That was his last one. Good call on that.
So what do you guys think of this cover?
It's great. I mean, like, I love the cover. It's awesome. And it's doing the job. You've got the hot girl that's scared. You got Conan looking pissed. And then you got a monster that's made of a disco ball attacking me.
Yeah. No, I think it's rad. I think it's a great cover. It is funny to me, like it's funny my own personal like appreciation of Shokoth's design, even though he kind of looks sillier with like the Egyptian headdress and the bracelets and the sash or whatever else he's got inside the comic. I actually prefer that look to this like more stripped down, arguably more menacing looking on the cover, just because he's more hard edged, you know?
Sure.
But I actually kind of prefer the sillier version that we get inside the story. But as a cover, it's a great cover.
Yeah, the one in the story is, I like the one in the story. He's cooler because it's a wrestling pop when he shows up. They scream his name. He's standing.
Yeah, like, his shock off.
Yeah, and like,
yeah, exactly.
Crowd goes fucking wild. Like, and I'm like, look at this dude.
I scared my dog. Yeah. I scared my dog proclaiming the name of Shock Off.
Shock Off should inspire fear.
Or Conan's yelling, now what were you, Crom's devils? What in seven Hyborian hells is that? She's like, I told you, Conan!
I mean, we're kind of skipping around, but like he thought when he heard her scream the creature's name and he thought she was just shouting a bunch of nonsense.
No.
And she's like, no, it's the thing's name.
Yeah.
The whole time. Like, what do we know about Conan? He hates magic. And so when people start talking magic, he goes, yeah, whatever. He's like, a bunch of magic jib jab. I hate it. You know, like, I hate your magic. And she's like, well, I'm cursed. And I know that the guy that I work for is still alive because he was like, hey, as long as I'm alive, you're alive. But if I die, you die. So you can't mess with me. You can't kill me. And Conan's like, oh, that sucks. And she's like, I would have killed him if I had the chance, but put this damn curse on me. And he's like, ha-ha, I like you. You're crazy, girl. And so whenever she's talking about this, he's just like, uh-huh, okay, sure. Because, yeah, of course, Conan not only hates magic, he doesn't believe any of it exists until he runs into something magic every issue. Right?
Let's set ourselves up for really getting into it. So our creatives, we've mentioned Roy Thomas, John Buscema, Joe Sinnott. Yeah. Petra Goldberg is doing the coloring. Yay, Petra, go. And John Costanza is the letterer. And this, I've got a synopsis here. It kind of helps me focus the story. So here we go. Conan travels south through the border kingdoms. He is being followed by Yemli, crimson-eyed demons who are keeping their distance, but they're seemingly herding him to some unknown destination. As sheepdog herds his flock, he grumbles. The Yemli herd him to Murdo Ramon, a magician who tasks Conan with taking a magical amulet to Themis Herklar, regent of Falkar. To the east, a belly full of wine, food for Conan and his horse, and a bag of gold seals the deal. But first, sleep. And in the morning, the odd magician is gone. So Conan begins his task and passes into the small village of Safanol. There he finds a girl, Stefania, in the process of being burned at the stake for her service to the sorcerer, Zoquenor. Conan rescues her and discovers that the girl is mystically bonded to Zoquenor. Although the sorcerer is believed dead, Stefania knows otherwise because of a mystical bond, a conjurer's curse, placed on her by Zoquenor. If he was truly dead, then so would she. They head to Zoquenor's keep, which was destroyed by the villagers of Safanol, only to find its innermost chambers protected by the living statue Sokoth of the Many Stones. His sword proving useless.
Fool, nothing can harm Sokoth of the Many Stones, is the only thing Sokoth ever says.
Conan discovers that the chemicals in Zoquenor's lab can melt the creature into its component stones, and Sokoth is defeated. In the adjoining chamber, they find the body of Zoquenor in a state of rigid, sleep-like undeath, and Stefania vows to return the sorcerer to life. This I swear! And that is about a chapter and a half of the book this is adapted off of.
So is the stuff with the wizard at the beginning, is that all from the novel?
Yes. Yeah, all of this is... Like it follows the novel very closely. When he's talking to the wizard and the wizard's like, yeah, I picked you.
Or Doramon, which sounds like a Pokemon that murders you.
And he's a funny, like this wizard is.
He's ridiculous. He's kind of like.
He is a Pokemon.
Loosely Asian?
Mm-hmm. mean, oh. Yeah. And he, in the book, he says, you know, to Kothar, I watched you and I saw these deeds you did. And so I chose you to do this task. And it's to deliver a magic amulet to Themis Herklar. And in the comic, they change it so that he mentions a couple things. Marvel's going to hype Marvel. So he's like, Oh yeah, I saw what you did in Savage Tales number 4, and I saw what you did in Savage Sword of Conan number 1, yeah, and that's yeah. why mm-hmm. I chose you.
Mm-hmm. Like was he was not there though. They're just doing it, right? They're just saying it.
I heard about these great deeds. I gazed out upon the horizons of my mind and saw you a few months gone, raging single-handed against an island full of Vanir men. And that was in Savage Tales number 4.
First appearance of Midoriman for collectors. So
there you go. Then saw you battle the gods themselves as you sought in vain to ravish Atali, daughter of the frost giant Ymir, as seen in Savage Sword of Conan number 1. I actually liked how Roy did that, because the guy then's like, surely I reasoned a man who will oppose both men and gods will not balk at a pair of paltry sorcerers. And so he's like really playing up Conan's ego.
Oh yeah, no, he knows what he's doing. But let me ask real quick. We've got Murdoramon. We've got Zoquenor, right? We've got all these Zhadordor and Ishtar, all these crazy dude names, and then our hot chick, Stefania. What's up with that? Like, it's like, oh, I am Miraconor, and this is my sidekick, Megan. You know, like, what are we doing?
I think that Roy had like a boggle, you know, that thing you shake for boggle full of letters.
Stefania's right out of the book, too.
Yeah, the names are out of the book. Yeah.
Oh, the names are out of the book, even though it's an adaptation. He just straight up took the exact names.
And I'm wondering if they're like, if part of the thinking here is, I want to illustrate, like, this guy sounds foreign and crazy because he's bad, he's evil. But I'm going to describe this chick as super hot. Oh, by the way, she might have a name, that hot chick you're in high school with, nerd. You know, like, and so you're like, ooh, I want to save Stefania or whatever. It's weird.
Yeah, he changed the names of like the countries and the gods that are right. sworn yeah. upon.
Conan's plan, right?
But other than that, he kept all the names. He kept the names of like the
wild.
The wizards, the demons, the Yemli, like all that stuff is all from Fox.
Interesting.
Yeah. The Kotharisms that are applied to Conan bother me a little bit.
Why?
Just because I don't think he's that easily swayed by food and money. And I mean, yes and no. Like this wizard just says, hey man, I'm going to feed your horse. I'm going to feed you. And carry this magical trinket,
yeah,
to this dude.
And then he's literally like, here's some money. And Conan's like, this better not disappear. And he's like, don't worry, it won't. And Conan goes, okay.
Like, yeah, hitting the sack. And then like wakes up and that dude's gone. But then there's still another spread. So he can have breakfast before he splits.
Ever met has screwed you over. And this one, he's like, all right, I'm going to trust you. I don't like it, but I'm going to trust you.
I mean, yeah. I think part of it is also that like Conan, he's essentially... This isn't a desert, but he is essentially lost in the desert because
the borderland,
he's been traveling for so long and he's out of food. He's out of water.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and the wizard's just like, well, if you do what I ask, I'll take care of you. And if you don't, you're going to die.
I think it's interesting that he kept the name of this town at, like Falkar, like that's not, you know, he didn't change his destination to like one of Howard's known locations. He like kept the names of these towns and everything. He kept the name of the tavern they pass when.
Oh, Conan right. Because he wanted to go to that bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
That tavern. And she's like, there'll be time for that later.
Yeah. When he rescues the girl and like the town is like, we don't want her here. We don't want her kind here. Fine. Go ahead and take her. Because Conan's like, listen up.
Yeah, the Tavern of the
I'll
Ringing
kick all
Bell.
Your asses if you don't let this girl go.
You can drop the town in there and just be like, well, this town exists on Conan's planet. But if it was like a whole nother region that we've never heard, like you can say that town exists in this part of.
I mean, you know, I find it really interesting that they would have been allowed to just wholesale take like what would have been trademarked.
Yeah. Right.
Names, right? It's like Marvel naming a city Metropolis. If the company that published those books was still around and like keeping the books in print and stuff after 5 years,
yeah,
I just, it's kind of surprising how that works, but maybe it's because it was like a creator-owned thing. Maybe Gardner Fox gave him permission.
Okay, it says here, by the mid-1970s, Gardner had retired from comics after writing a few half-hearted stories for Marvel. He never adjusted to the Marvel method of plot first, then art, then dialogue. And in any event, his plot-centered prose wasn't quite in tune with the temper of the comic book times. But he remained as gracious as when he had been, one of the top writers in the field, and he was pleased to allow me to adapt his first Kothar novel into several-part serial in the comic for whatever pittance Marvel paid in those days. And he says, yeah, I know I should have probably paid him out of pocket, but Conan was selling very, very well by then, was one of Marvel's top sellers, in fact, so I had no problem shifting the cost.
Fair enough. Yeah, because I remember you telling us when we when last we met that Roy would, especially to get Conan published at Marvel in the first place, Roy was like paying out of pocket for stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. So I'm sure that like maybe this is like the equivalent of like licensing ROM, you know, a few years later. They paid a licensing fee and now we've got Murder Man, you know, the wizard, Murder Man.
Joe, I like going through the pages and looking at it, like, oh, so, okay, so Petra Goldberg is coloring the hell out of this. Like, it looks great. Her colors are awesome. Joe Sinnott's inks do have a really different effect on Conan's look, like his face,
yeah.
It's really interesting. And I want to say that there's all of the inkers in this series of books I'm going to be talking about kind of have this effect. But hey, we do get another awesome Conan kick a door down. We talked when he kicked the cage open.
Hell yeah. That thing turns to splinters, this door. Sinnott had a very smooth lined inking style. Everything he inked looked sleek. Smooth and sleek. And I think that if we look back at our past Conan stuff, the inkers were probably a little bit more, a little rougher, a little bit more, you know, rough and tumble looking.
Yeah.
Everything that Sinnott inks looks very clean. And I think that's what makes it look a little bit different when we're looking at it on Conan.
Because I'm looking at some Joe Sinnott stuff, superhero stuff, and it's very similar. Like, and this looks more Marvel superhero to me than some of the other Conan stuff we've looked at with you. And I started looking at it, I didn't realize it, because I was like, the way Conan uses his sword in these books is so much different than like the way a character like the Black Knight uses his sword in the pages of the Avengers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Conan, straight up, cutting arms off of demons, stabbing people, you know, and like they don't show, there isn't like blood flying out, but you see like,
I mean, he practically cuts a dude in half in this comic.
Yeah, Bushima, like the art is like showing you, this is the arc of the sword. It went through that guy.
And yeah, then it goes through this guy from like shoulder to, from like left shoulder to right side of the body. Like it goes through him pretty far.
And like the Black Knight, meanwhile, is literally yelling out loud, beware the flat of my sword, and spanking dudes on the butt with it.
Yeah. You know, he uses it to deflect bullets.
And like anything but actually stabbing or slashing. He's like, he's sticking it in things to unlock stuff. You know, like, they really got creative. Yeah, he beats Kang by hitting him in the back of the head with the flat of his sword. Really?
Sorry.
The section in the ruins of Zoquinor's towers, at least half the book, and the combat with Shacoth is, you know, a good four pages. We've talked about Shacoth, like the full page review of that dude is rad, right? Like,
yeah
he's huge, lumbering disco ball stone golem. This version is different than the one on the cover.
He looks more like a monster almost on the cover.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But in this one, he's got wristbands.
Yeah,
He does have
little,
like a
he's got his little
collar.
Panties. Yeah.
His panties are more.
It looks like a fashion choice, not something that somebody put on him for modesty. Because he's got like a he's got like a chic little belt, you know, and all kinds of stuff.
That page reveal of Shalkoth, he's already like stepping in the spilled liquids.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem to have any effect there. So it's interesting how they have Conan figure that out.
Page, it's something that probably takes a little time. It's like eating away at the glue of the stones or whatever over time. Yeah.
Or it doesn't affect his super hard feet, you know?
but it does, though, because that's where Conan notices. So it just takes a while.
Got to get on the top of his feet. It's got like hobbit feet or something, right? You know, they're real hard. I don't know.
No, he stands in the liquid, and over time you can see that. Yeah. The stones have kind of fallen away. Like whatever is holding the stones together is giving out.
And they do keep showing him. You look panel by panel. There's always some of this stuff on the floor, and he's always standing in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're giving you the signal. Yeah. It's all.
So like Conan doesn't splash him with it until after he figures it out. It's like, right. Oh, I see.
I think the following page after the full page reveal of Shalkoth is strange to me because it's three panels, and it's a big panel at the top and then two tall ones. Barely anything going on in the backgrounds, if anything. It's almost like they had to add a page.
Maybe.
I can tell, like, this is only a 19-page, an 18-page story. A standard comic length in that day and age was 22 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already 4 pages shy of a regular length comic story. So, yeah, unless there was other back matter in the comic, like, they had to fill some space.
Or maybe there
and
was
it's probably stretched out a bit.
Yeah, maybe there was supposed to be, and then they were like, we don't have the back matter. Pad this thing out. Like, do it. We're not doing that thing. Whatever.
It's just interesting to me that Roy could not get... It almost feels like, to your point, Jared, it feels like maybe Roy didn't do as good of a job pacing the story to make it fit the requirements of a comic.
Sure.
Like, he knows it's going to be a multi-part story. But this, it doesn't make any, it's like the Lord of the Rings movies, right?
Right.
Where, the fight with Shelob actually takes place in the middle of book one or whatever it was, where they had to like move things around so that the movies ended on satisfactory points. Because if you end, like, it doesn't make any sense for this issue to end anywhere than this moment where we find the catatonic body of Zokonor with two Qs. I just noticed it's two Qs, not just one.
Oh yeah.
And if the story had gone on another 4 pages, it would have been like in the middle of, and now they're on a horse on their way to something, the end. And that's not a really satisfactory cliffhanger.
Well, and think about every Conan issue. Well, how's it go? Conan shows up. There's trouble a brewing. Conan gets in the trouble. Conan gets himself out of the trouble. See you next issue, kids. You know, this is the end of the wrestling match. He beat up the big guy. He figured out a way to win. He beat up the big guy. They find, like, it turns out the sorcerer guy that they were looking for. There he is. This is where you stop. You have to stop here.
Yeah. Like, this is the most satisfactory way to end this issue. If you're dividing up Fox's Kothar story to cover however many issues, like, this is a great chapter break. And it's like you said, Jared, it was a chapter and a half.
Yeah, because the actual chapter break in the novel is when you see Shaka. That's the end of the first chapter.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
And then then it goes on a little bit further. So yeah, it's about, you know, a little bit
and
into the second chapter.
Had this comic been published today, the comic would have ended with the reveal of Shalkoth, and we would have never seen this battle in this comic.
First appearance of Shalkoth, yeah. And it'd just be his shoulder. You wouldn't even get a full shot, you know? You'd have to wait for the cover of the next issue for the reveal, right?
Yeah, sure. And it wouldn't be considered the first appearance because it's not a full appearance of it. It's just his leg.
Yeah, it's like your Venom appearance, right? Mm-hmm. Your first Venom and your first full Venom.
I do, though, on this this page that you pointed out with just the three panels, we get one of those patented Big John sword swings where he's basically like twirling the sword all the way around his body. I love it. Every time I see it, I'm like, yep.
A speed line.
That's but how you do it.
It's also great, though, because, like, they're doing the thing. They're showing you, like, all right, Conan, time to do the Conan thing. Hit him with your sword. That's what Conan does. Bing. Doesn't work at all. Not only does it not work, this thing takes his sword on the next page. Like, get out of here with this.
Well, like, Conan, unlike Kothar, does not have an enchanted sword.
No.
What I'm saying is, like, this is, like, Conan's fucked, kids. Sorry. I think Conan's going to die. That's his move. Hit him with the sword. What else is he going to do? You know, it's great. It's great. Because now Conan's got to reason his way out of something. We don't see him do that a whole lot. Usually he's just cutting dudes in half.
Yeah.
I did like this this three-panel sequence where Conan is trying to sword Shacoth.
The fight.
The first panel, the sword just boing, you know, right off the stones.
Right.
Impact, spasm of agony shoots up Conan's arm. Then he ducks a punch, and then he tries to stab Shacoth to see if that works any better, and it doesn't. And I love, like, the sword, it's kind of like wobbling a little bit because he's jabbing it into something. Yep. Like, I was like, oh, that's great. That's very good.
Yeah, I also love the close up on Shacoth when he speaks is very funny because he's like has like missing teeth and they're just square like simple teeth.
He's like a decoupage skull face.
yeah, yeah. And then the melting of him when Conan figures out that it's gonna be all these vials and liquids in this alchemy lab, and he chucks one right into his face and he starts melting, and like Shacoth grabs his head, it's all smoking and melting and falling apart.
Mm-hmm. It's great though, because like we get to see Conan problem solve, and that's mm-hmm. typical man thing. He's not a problem solving guy. He's a kick the door open, whip some ass kind of guy, right?
Obviously. Yep. Yes, and it ends with them finding the body of Zoquenor, and then and we're going to go to the Rats Dance at Ravengard.
Great name.
Ooh, ooh.
The Rats Dance at Ravengard. I love it.
Yeah. So, okay, now that round one is over, Kothar versus Conan. I know you guys aren't familiar with Kothar to really weigh in, and what you know is what I've told you and what you've kind of glanced at on the internet while we were talking.
I don't think I have to be. I think this perfectly illustrates what we were talking about. Everybody wanted a Conan, but there was only one Conan. So people made Conan clones and told stories that you very easily can take Kothar off the cover and put Conan on the cover, and no one would notice. Literally no one would notice. What would they have had to do? There, other than what you said, we're like, I didn't really buy, like, you know, how easily he went with the magician. That might be the one thing that stands out a little different here. And he wasn't blonde. Right? I mean, Conan easily wins this, because this is just a Conan story with a different name and a guy that, you know, had problems asking for permission.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. I think that it's clear. Again, in Kothar's defense, I have not read a single page of Kothar anything, but it does seem fairly clear just from the description that you gave and the history of Fox's the past and the trajectory of his work that he was just trying to capitalize on popular fantasy trends.
Yeah.
And so, you know, turnabout is fair play for Roy to adapt a Kothar story and just kind of do it in a really kick-ass way. And so for me, Conan is going to get the edge, at least in round one, just because Conan is tough to beat.
And even the fact that Fox said, yeah, go for it. Fox knows the rules. He knew what he was doing. He knew. You know, he would have been like, how dare you? Kothar is a separate character that I developed very differently. No, it will not. I will. He was like, yeah, do it.
Well, I mean, and maybe
Howard,
maybe he thought and it could maybe it could have even transpired this way. Maybe adapting Kothar in the pages of Conan sold a few more Kothar books than it normally might have. Because like Judge Roy credits him yeah. at the beginning of the comic.
Judging by the stuff I read on Reddit, no. Like all those people are just like, yeah, I read this, but there's a reason why this shit's forgotten, you know, and this is not where Gardner Fox made his money. So
I too give round one to Conan because there'd be no Kothar without him. Well, my next episode will be issues 47 and 48. They're shorter stories with backup stories, so I've separated the backup stories out. I am going to cover those stories at the end of this series of battle. Next episode, issue 47, 48. That's where I will say, was Wolf better? Because I believe Wolf is the same month as issue 48, I think, is when the first issue of Wolf comes out. But like I said, I'm going to be talking about Wolf on another show. So if you want to hear what I got to say about Wolf, go over there to the Bronze Age Monsters.
It's a Titanic team up.
Yeah, and talk about that. And then come back over here to talk about the Conan books that match up with that one. And then going forward, I will talk about Wolf and Conan in a same episode. Issue. Bang, boom, 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 jing, jang, and crank. Swords clash, baby. Muscles flex. Thews.
Rats dance.
Rats dance.
Yeah, man.
Joe and Matt, thank you for joining me again, as you have done in the past. Please tell the people where to find you.
You can find our show at twoheadednerd.com, and from there, you can find where to find us elsewhere on the internet.
We're everywhere. We're on them damn YouTubes. We're everywhere you download them damn podcasts. Yeah. We're all over the place.
We're on the Blue Sky. We're on Instagram, Instagram, Facebook, you know.
Not on X, because X is for fucking Nazis, but we're everywhere.
No, we deleted our X account.
All right. Okay, so people, go check them out. If you enjoy their occasional squabbles, there's no better place than on their own show to go get a little bit more of it. And I wanted to say that I've got a loot bag for any listener who approaches my occasional co-host and family member, Michael Munshaw, when he is making appearances at shows this fall. He nice. Did an original sketch card of Conan the Barbarian for the loot bag. I've got loot from I've got loot from Legend Comics and Coffee. I've got loot from Crit for Brains. I got loot from my own long boxes. I got loot from my homemade button maker. Let me tell you, it's dumb stuff. You're going to love it. So until next time, folks, please support your local comic book shops. Support your local public library. Hey, man, I just won a prize in the summer reading program. Got to go pick it up tomorrow morning. And until next time, make sure to always have your dancing shoes when you go to dance with rats.
Right, buddy. Yes. That's right. Them rats in Raven Guard, they know how to cut a rug.
That wasn't the best one, but thanks, fellas. Love you.
That was great. Yeah.